Hello, and welcome to this Blacks in the Scriptures podcast series. This podcast contains an exclusive interview with Ed and Wanda Willis, members of the famed Black Panther Party during the historic Civil Rights Movement, and now active members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We're grateful that the Willises were willing to share their inspiring story of struggle and triumph from Panthers to priesthood with our audience. So thank you for tuning into Blacks in the Scriptures and for sharing this link with family, friends, and neighbors.
The following podcast is not an official production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but has been produced entirely by Blacks in the Scriptures. The intent of this work is to engage in discussion which will lead to a greater understanding of the will of the Lord concerning all His children, and thus a greater unity among them. We urge each listening to use what we will share as a starting place for your own research and as a way to better articulate your prayers so that the Spirit of the Lord may confirm to you His perfect truth.
En vérité, je le dis, les hommes doivent œuvrer avec zèle à une bonne cause, faire beaucoup de choses de leur plein gré.
まことに私は言う、人は熱心に良いこと携わり、多くのことをその自由意志によって行い。
Porque el poder está en ellos, y en esto vienen a ser sus propios agentes.
Verily I say, men should be anxiously engaged in a good cause, and do many things of their own free will, and bring to pass much righteousness. For the power is in them, wherein they are agents unto themselves, and inasmuch as men do good, they shall in no wise lose their reward.
Hi, my name is Marvin Perkins, co-author of Blacks in the Scriptures, and we'd like to welcome our listeners from the United States and around the world. Thank you all for tuning in, and we sincerely hope that our efforts to help will do just that. We'd also like to say that we don't claim to have a perfect knowledge of all things, but we are willing to share those things that we've been given from above, that it might draw men and women closer to our Father in heaven and our Savior Jesus Christ. And it is in His holy name that we dedicate this outreach. When we were first baptized into the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we made covenants with the Lord that we would dedicate our lives to sharing the good news with others, learning from on high, and then sharing what we've been given, and to go to the mountain of the Lord to help those who are not able to help themselves. And so we are doing what we can to honor the covenants that we've entered into.
Well, hi, this is Marvin Perkins and Bishop Fred Bethel for the African American Outreach Program. And we are here with Ed and Wanda Willis of Los Angeles. Ed and Wanda, how are you?
Fine. How are you doing?
Good morning. We are great. Bishop Bethel, you want to say hello?
I want to say hello as well and want to say how excited I am to be here with the Willis family and to hear their story. And this is great, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Bishop Bethel.
Well, the Willises have a tremendous story, and they recently did a fireside in Los Angeles to a full house, and there were so many requests coming in from all over the country, even outside the country, to hear more of their story. So we're glad they can join us today to share a little bit more about Panthers, from Panthers to the priesthood. So those who don't know, the Willises used to be a part of the Black Panther Party and have now come to join the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And there are many people who want to know about that transition. So Ed and Wanda, where does your story begin?
A story begins about probably about 34, 35 years ago. Ed and I lived together as a family unit, not married, but we live together as a family. We have two daughters. And as a result of trying to find out more about ourselves and increase ourselves as African Americans and receive equality, we became engaged in the Black Panther Party.
Yes, during that time, we were being inundated with information that was educating the Black community more and more about the injustices. And it's not like we didn't know a lot of it that would come over the media on a regular basis, but there were some atrocities that were done that just really got up under your skin. And at the same time, we saw leaders that would speak up for the rights of black people, even the Kennedys, who would be assassinated. And so black people began to direct their attention more to more violent, maybe, or reactionary type groups, whether it was religious or political. Religious, say, the black Muslims, or political, the Black Panther Party, which was a political party.
For the sake of some of our listeners, where were you actually born and raised? Lead us up to that, if you would.
I was born and raised in Los Angeles, California, and I was raised partially here and partially in Oakland, and that's where I met Ed.
Well, me, myself, when I was not even born yet, my parents lived in Berkeley, but I was born in an Oakland County hospital, and I spent a lot of time in Oakland, but I was raised in Berkeley. We became members of the Oakland chapter of the Black Panther Party, and that was shot up by the police, and their second location was established in Berkeley on Shattuck Avenue, and we soon after they relocated there, we moved, but about two blocks from them in our own place. And so I was raised in Berkeley, which in a way was a blessing, because my experiences as a small child in Oakland was quite volatile. And things kind of changed when we moved to Berkeley, though I still had some of those volatile behavioral patterns with me. Began to mellow out as time went on and got used to this new culture.
Understand. Now, for those who don't know, can you explain who the Black Panthers are, what they stood for?
Well, the Black Panther Party was an organization developed to assist the community, the black community, in determining their own destiny and to discontinue the atrocities and illegalities that were put on the black community by even the police departments of the community and of the world, and to begin to stand on our own two feet, so to speak, and then be able to represent that, even if it was by the barrel of a gun to that extreme. Unfortunately, the very rights that we were looking to embrace, we were standing on a foundation of communism, and those two just don't mix very well.
Exactly. Can you explain that? I can hear some of the questions in the minds going off already. What did he mean by that? Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, I can. For instance, like when I first joined, I was introduced to the Minister of Education, George Murphy, and the captain of the Black Panther Party, David Hilliard.
What year was this that you joined?
This was 1968.
Okay, great. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And they were to assist me in my orientation. And so the first thing that George Murray handed me, the first literature that he handed me for me to begin to educate myself, was the Red Book of Mao Zedong. And so that kind of communistic socialism was to be our foundation when we were actually after the right to vote, and women's rights were involved in that too. And even in the Black Panther Party, my wife can attest to this. She saw things done to women in the party that wasn't very righteous at all. But my point is that you can't find democracy in a communistic regime.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Wanda, did you have any experiences that you can share that you'd like to speak to?
Well, my experiences were a lot different. With Ed, he was into things I wasn't into. I was into preparing meals for the kids in school. We started the children's breakfast program. I was into soliciting food from the store owners in the neighborhood. And then all the sisters would get together and we'd make food. We'd make food for the members. And so we had a different approach our approach as women was a little more nurturing. Now, that's when I was involved in enjoying the Black Panther Party. When I started putting distance with myself was when I noticed that a lot of the men were trying to solicit very young girls for things that weren't right. A lot of drugs were being introduced, and I felt I didn't want to be a part of that.
The Black Panther Party was started by some very intelligent young men, but there was no screening process for new members to come into the party. So when people joined the Black Panther Party, you got, yes, maybe some more intelligent people, but you also got the dregs. You got people that had axes to grind. You had people that had psychological issues. You had people that were hiding and maybe just wanted a reputation, because the Black Panther Party became a distinguishing title in many areas of the community. And you had people that had these hidden agendas that weren't conducive to the community, weren't conducive to the Black culture, and they weren't conducive to family survival. They just had their own hidden agendas, and they brought in a lot of junk. And so because of not having that screening process, it caused a lot of problems, even to the point where Black Panthers were considered as racist. And I didn't join the Black Panther Party to kill white people. I joined the Black Panther Party to protect Black people. And so you had these two dichotomies happening in the Black Panther Party that caused quite a strain on it.
You know, that's a very, very important point. The purpose for which you join the Black Panther, some could actually see it as hate toward Caucasians. However, that wasn't your focus at all. It was actually as a protection for Blacks and the freedoms and the rights. And also, exactly. When you talk a little bit about the foundation, you know, I'm reading today the 10-point plan of the Black Panther Party, and some of the listeners would be pleased to hear this and curious to hear what the foundation was. Let me see how many I can get through of these quickly. The 10-point plan included, number one, we want freedom. We want power to determine the destiny of our Blacks and oppressed communities. Number two, we want full employment for our people. Number three, we want an end to the robbery by the capitalists of our Black and oppressed communities. Number four, we want decent housing fit for the shelter of human beings. Five, we want decent education for our people that exposes the true nature of this decadent American society. We want education that teaches us our true history and our role in the present day society. So with the first five of those 10-point system, the foundation for which this is built upon, I don't think you can find many people that can argue with that.
Exactly.
And as we go on, number six, we want completely free health care for all Black and oppressed people. We want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of Black people, other people of color, all oppressed people inside the United States. These are all worthy goals. We want an immediate end to all wars of aggression. Number nine, we want freedom for all Black and oppressed people now held in U.S. federal, state, county, city, and military prisons and jails. We want trials by a jury of peers for all persons charged with so-called crimes under the laws of this country. Now, some people might have a tough time with that until they start walking in the shoes of Blacks that are convicted of crimes that they didn't commit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially by white juries.
Exactly. And then the 10th one is we want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, peace, and people's community control of modern technology. When did the Black Panther Party first begin?
Well, I have difficulty with that one. I think it was somewhere in the earlier part of the 60s, around 64.
So it was in definite response to the civil rights movement and some of the atrocities that were being suffered and forwarded toward Blacks at the time.
Yeah. You know, you had different leaders of the Black Panthers came in. Like Elridge didn't come in until around 66. Stokely Carmichael, who was the Minister of Information, Stokely Carmichael, the Prime Minister, I think he was around 67. Bobby Seals and Huey P. Newton started it. They were the co-leaders. So they were in the birth of the Black Panther Party. So, but it gained momentum as time went on. I wanted to inform you that there was a pretty well-known author at the time. His name was Leroy Jones. He was a very important contributor, financial contributor, and Marlon Brando. We had on the back page of the Black Panther Party, it had a extremely extensive list of people in high places that contributed financially to the Black Panther Party. So it wasn't only African Americans who were contributing to that cause. There were Europeans as well, Native Americans, Hispanics, and they held positions as doctors, actors, lawyers. So it wasn't as difficult in the grassroots portion as it may seem, because when you read off those 10-point deals there, there was a lot of people who were in agreement with that.
Right, right. Especially when you look at the vision. The vision, as I'm reading it, is the original vision of the Black Panther Party was to serve the needs of the oppressed people in our communities and defend them against their oppressors. And so with that being a vision of the organization, it really is easy to understand why you would have widespread support of people of all cultures.
But, you know, the media didn't really let that be known.
Sure.
About how much support we had.
Sure.
The other thing is, let's take it down to the neighborhood.
Okay.
You'd be surprised if there was a confrontation. In other words, if a police officer, a couple of police officers pulled a Black over to the curb and they get out of the car and they're questioning them or something, they got them faced up against a wall or something like that, and the policemen look around and see two, because we traveled in twos, Black Panthers observing their actions. I can't tell you how many times the policemen let that person they had up against the wall move on, and they get back in their cars and carry on, just by seeing the sight of two Black Panthers observing their actions towards that so-called potential perpetrator.
Now, that's very interesting. Ed, would you help us to understand why that would be? What was going on in that dynamic?
Well, a lot of times the situation would really go awry when police officers would pull an African-American over. If that African-American resisted verbally, announcing that he had done nothing and that they're infringing on his rights and stuff like that, well, then the boys and the N-word and things like this would come out, which would enrage the person even more. And if he said anything like call them honky or cracker or racist dog or something like that, I'm sorry if this is too strong.
No, this is fine.
That might cause them to bring out billy clubs, and then you got a beaten up individual who's gone to jail. And that's really putting it as diplomatic as I possibly can.
Okay, so the presence of two Black Panther Party members witnessing this pullover, why would that cause the officers to change their course and the way they handled this situation?
Well, number one, you got witnesses, and then you got the type of witnesses that would follow through and that weren't afraid to testify and that would make sure, and Black Panthers were trained to get numbers from the car, names from the name tags, and also to be able to describe what the officers looked like, record what time of day it was, and any circumstances that they could remember that led up to the pulling the Black person over or stopping the Black person.
So when you talk about this organization, we're starting to get a clearer picture of not only how they were organized, the vision, but even some of the training. So how did training within the Black Panthers take place? How often did it take place? Where did it take place?
Well, it had to move around.
Yes.
But I know one place that it would happen would be Defermery Park, that enduringly was changed to the name by the community, Bobby Hutton Memorial Park. That was after his being killed by the Oakland police. They started calling it Bobby Hutton Memorial Park. We would have drills there as well, and also rallies. But then in personal meetings in different locations, sometimes it would be a church, sometimes it would be a hall, a small hall, or sometimes it would be San Francisco State University at some location in a cafeteria or in somebody's home. Wherever we got word that we were to go for a talk or a lesson, we'd go. They also taught Swahili. They also made arrangements for us to go to the gun range to teach us how to shoot and different things like that.
Wow. And one of the questions that comes to mind is, well, you're talking about the Bay Area. You're talking about Oakland, San Francisco, Berkeley. How widespread did the Black Panther Party become throughout the nation?
It was nationwide, all over. You know, from Louisiana to New York, from New York to Detroit to Chicago, from Chicago to Seattle, Seattle to Texas, Texas to Los Angeles. You know, I mean, it was just all over the place.
This is great.
It was spreading. Fred Hampton was murdered in Chicago, so he was a leader in the Chicago branch of the Black Panther Party.
Do we know who murdered Fred Hampton?
No, it's still a mystery. Fred Hampton and a friend of his was found murdered in a suburb of Chicago, an area that he would, for no knowing reason of any of us, why he would even, his body would even be there. But now, what I believe I know about that, I won't even begin to talk about.
Well, I bet there are a lot of things that you can share with us based on your experience within the Black Panther Party. And Bishop Bethel, any questions you might have?
You know, I'm just in awe, Brother Perkins, by what I'm hearing here. This is great information. And by all means, let's keep on.
I want to know more. I just want to say one thing about my wife. She was right. You know, she was more into, and many of the women were more into the nurturing aspects, nurturing the community, nurturing the children, education, nutrition, support, to bring up self-esteem and stuff like that. She was more involved in that. Me, I agreed with all of that stuff, but a lot of us guys, and believe me, there were some women who wanted to carry a rifle, you know, but the majority of them, like my wife, was about that. But me and a lot of other guys, whether you wanted to call us intellectuals, and I believed I was an intellectual because I looked at things like most of the brothers in the leadership because I was looking towards them. Like Stokely Carmichael, to me, was a mentor. And I looked at things intellectually. And I wasn't into destroying the white race, neither was the Black Panther Party. As a matter of fact, there was another political group called the Peace and Freedom Party. They were our allies, and they were predominantly white. So it wasn't about us doing reverse racism.
This is good to know. I asked a group of Caucasian friends what they knew about the Black Panther Party, and most of them didn't know very much at all. They had heard the name, but the association that comes to mind first is that it was a group that hates whites. And I'm glad we're helping to, how should I say, dissipate that misinformation by helping to better understand what the Black Panther Party was all about. And when we speak of that, we're hearing two sides. We're hearing the sides that were protecting, defending, but we're also hearing a lot about groups and efforts within the organization to help children and community. Wanda, can you tell us a little bit more about that part and all of the different efforts that were going on in that regard?
Okay. We helped for medical purposes when a young woman got pregnant or when a young woman was physically challenged with something, we would help with them medically. We try and steer them in a direction where they could get medical assistance. Because medical assistance back then for African Americans was always a challenge. Like I said, we did the breakfast program. We'd go to different store owners in the neighborhood, and we get, you know, 10-pound bag of potatoes, or we get bacon and eggs, and we get together and we cook it at the school and serve the children every morning a hot breakfast before they start school. We did tutoring programs for the kids so that they can understand their lessons, because I'm real big on education, so that was one of the things we wanted our kids to get, a good education. And sometimes in our community, our education was way lacking. You know, we didn't have books, or we didn't have pencils or paper.
Right.
And you know what? It's still like that.
Right.
It's still like that today. So we,
it's just nice to know that this was going on within this party that most people associate with aggressive thoughts toward Caucasians.
Well, you have to imagine that while Wanda may have been at one school, there were other sisters at many other schools. So it wasn't just happening at one school. It was happening all over
the nation. And that's why we have a free breakfast program today in all of the public school system.
Yeah, the Black Panther Party started that.
That is absolutely tremendous. What a great education.
You know, Mark.
Go ahead, Bishop. I'm sorry.
This interview alludes to what we were saying earlier today and how experience trumps explanation. And, you know, I know of the Black Panther Party, but just to hear the Willis's experience just really brings it to, you know, fruition in terms of this organization and better understanding the purpose behind the party. So I'm just grateful that these guys are sharing with us their experiences.
This is great. How did you attend your first meeting, your first Black Panther meeting? Tell us about that.
Well,
I went to my first Black Panther meeting with a well-known singer. He was my friend in high school. And I think I was in the 12th grade, and she was telling me about Stokely Carmichael and Huey P. Newton, and that they had this meeting on how to organize the blacks, how to get us to know who we are. And her name was Bonnie Pointer, and I went to the meeting, my first meeting with her, and I was sitting there in awe and so excited that we can do something. You know, we don't have to just live this life of being beat up or things taken care of, or living in a certain area or a certain box. We can make things happen for us. And so for me, that was my first opportunity to know that I deserved and I could go after more.
And this is great. And you mentioned Bonnie Pointer of the Pointer Sisters.
Right. Yeah.
And so was Bonnie a friend, a neighbor, or someone that just came around organizing and helping to get people to these meetings?
Bonnie was a friend. We did the Upward Bound program together at Mill College, and she was my friend. And in my our last year in school, we became pretty close. And so she found out about the program through her siblings, and she introduced it to me.
Oh, this is tremendous. This is great. This is a very good education. I think a good eye-opener for many regarding the Black Panthers, what they stood for. And based on everything that the two of you have shared with us, in my mind at least, it's a little easier to see how this transition to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints took place. So tell us a little bit about that and how you first became acquainted with the church. And even before that, help us to understand if you had known or heard anything about the church before your first encounter.
Okay, that's me. I was going to the University of Washington, and I lived in student housing. And in the front and in the back, I lived between two Mormons. And the woman in the front, the family in the front took care of my kids for me while I worked, and the woman in the back showed me how to can. And she gave me primary books and books on how to raise your children. And so my neighbor to the side said, "What are you doing hanging around with those Mormons?" And I said, well, what's wrong with them? Well, they're Mormons. They don't like black people. They don't know nothing about black people. And I said, well, they're very nice to me. You know, they're showing me how to can, and the lady's taking care of my kids for me. You need to leave them alone, she said. And she, what she called herself doing was pouring me a cup of tea, she said. Leave them alone. They are racist people. And I said, well, you know, they're not racist to me. And as long as they're nice, I'm going to continue to be with them. And I'm sorry you feel that way about them. So let's fast forward. My mother, who's a Bible-thumping Christian who believes in God, who loves him with all her heart, she and I were searching for something because we would go to church and there was a void. We come from a Baptist background.
Okay.
And my mother was very active in church, but some of the things she saw happen, she wasn't happy with it. And I'll mention some of them, like taking up donation every Sunday for the pastor or the pastor's reunion or taking up for food. And they go buy food and they sit it in the closet until it spoils instead of giving it to the family members who were hungry in the church. And she was just really, she said, I know that there's more. I know that God has a better plan than this. So we, my mother and I, start looking. We start praying and we start looking. And we went to church on the way. We seeked all the Baptist church. And then we went to Church of God in Christ. And then we went to non-denominational. And we sit in the parking lot. And we would just say, that was wonderful, and that was uplifting. But there's something more. There's got to be something. It's something more. The missionaries knocked on my mom's door in Simi Valley. And she called me and said, there's two young men that just knocked on my door. And they talked to me about another testament of Jesus Christ.
What year is this, Wanda?
1977.
Okay.
And they are really nice young men, and I'm listening to them talk about Jesus when he died. He visited America. And I mean, she had the whole story down pat, and she was telling me. And simultaneously, the missionaries knocked on my door. Now, I don't know if she sent them there or if they just knocked on my door, but they knocked on my door in Northridge, California, and I let them in, and I listened to them, and they said things to me that I had never heard before. Number one, that Jesus and God loved me, that he died for me, and that he desires us to follow him, not to force us, not to threaten hell with us, but he desires us, and they had a whole plan that I had never, ever heard before.
Wow.
All my questions were answered. And so my mother, my father, and my two children were baptized in 1978.
Which month in 1978?
November 10th.
Do you remember what month it was when the missionaries knocked on your door and your mother's door in 77?
Yes, I do. It was in September.
In September. Okay, great. And so the big question and why dates are important for those who are not aware is that it was June of 1978, June 8th, 1978, is when the restriction on priesthood to those of African descent, that ban was ended. And so there's a lot of curiosity around yet the timing of your beginning to search and your inviting the missionaries in when they knocked on your door, that and of your mother's door as well. Was this priesthood, did you know about the restriction on priesthood at the time?
No, I didn't. I'd heard about it, but it just wasn't that important because, number one, I was a woman and I didn't have to have the priesthood, so I thought.
Okay.
I didn't understand the importance of it. I just knew it was something important, but my dad received the priesthood.
Yeah, I think one of the questions would be from, what was it, September of 77 until November of 1978,
mm-hmm.
and that's almost a year of investigation. What was going on in that year?
No.
Did I miss a date?
Yeah.
Well, possibly
I could have missed the date because I'm real kind of funny about that, but no, I was baptized right away.
Oh, so you were talking...
within a month or two, yeah.
Okay, and so was this 78 that you were baptized or 77?
It was 78.
Okay, great. And so, so that makes sense that you were baptized just about a month later and your father received the priesthood. And why it wouldn't have been an obstacle simply because in June of 78 is when the restriction was lifted. So it would not have been a restriction and an issue for the family. I can see that now.
No, it was not an issue. But I worked with Britt McConkie. I did a couple of firesides, and we did a lot of canvassing around the African-American community. And I met several men who had been members of the church and were just waiting to receive that priesthood. And that's when I learned how important the priesthood was.
Expound on that just a little bit, and help us understand which McConkie you said that you'd work with there.
Britt McConkie.
Britt.
Brother. Yeah, it was Bruce's brother.
That was Bruce R. McConkie's brother. And Bruce R. McConkie was one of the members of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles here within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And tell us about a little bit more about these young men that you had met that had been waiting and how you found out the importance of the priesthood and that there was a restriction in place.
Well, now, I cannot remember their names, but I do remember the type of people they were. One guy really stood out. He was a bodybuilder. He had a beautiful wife, and I think he had been a member of the church for something like 16 years, and he hadn't had an opportunity to receive the priesthood, but he kept saying, I know it was the thing to do. He lived out in South Central L.A., him and his family, and he would come and he'd talk at firesides to educate us so that we would know that we were on the right track.
That's great.
African Americans.
That's great. His name is Paul Divine.
You know him?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
He's a great man.
He is. He let my dad know how important the priesthood was, and he talked to my dad, and he said, I was in it before I could receive it, but I knew it was right. And that let me know that the priesthood was something that every African-American man should have.
I really admire the example of those like Paul Divine, Darius Gray, and many of those others who had the ability to walk away but chose to honor and obey what the Lord had given them. And even though they realized this was going to be challenging, I know it's of the Lord, and that's why I'm there. Their example is so huge in my eyes, at least. And Ed, I'm sure you have some thoughts you'd like to share on that.
Well, for me, I have been involved with various churches of different denominations. I was born again in Hawaii in 1983, May 7th, 1983. And when that experience happened to me, now that was my second time being baptized. I was baptized as a child, 7 years old, and I didn't know what they were doing to me. But I did understand it in Hawaii, and I felt that we had all been hoodwinked and bushwhacked and sideswiped because I really felt something and felt that a tremendous weight had been lifted and that Jesus became more real to me than ever. Now, I was always required to go to the church, I could say that I believed in God. I would even say that I was a Christian, but I just wasn't able to live up to that responsibility. But when I became born again, and as you know, there's a temple there on the island of Oahu, and that's where I live. Mormons were all over the place, and members of the church were saying, Eddie, don't talk to them, don't talk to them. I said, why? What did they do? Nobody could ever tell me what was wrong with the Mormons. So that was just logged in my mind. But that was a long time ago. Many years passed by, and I'd even done some small mission work in Mexico and Cuernavaca and Tlalpan, all around the Mexico City area and in Mexico City on two occasions with a particular church. And I did like music ministry on the beach of Waikiki Sunday mornings when people really wasn't ready to hear about Jesus Christ after their hangovers, you know, but did it nonetheless. And to the military on military bases and stuff. But
that's great.
I never joined a church. Never once joined a church. There's two organizations I've joined. One was the Black Panther Party, and the other one was the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so I got to a point where I had to do something. I wanted to live the best possible life that I could. And I figured out the best way to do that is with God at the helm. And so I was praying concerning the best possible relationship that I could have with God. Now, along with that, circumstances happened where Wanda and I had reunited through my sister, and neither one of us had gotten married. The flame was still there. We were soulmates. And so we began a dialogue over the phone. And in fact, I was in San Francisco, and we talked. Now, I, in this relationship with God, I had my own program. You know, my prayer, my meditation, my walk, my exercise, everything that I did, I put God first before it. And then some issues start coming up. Well, Wanda's religion, you know, there was no drinking and smoking. I smoked cigarettes, and I loved good wine. You know, being from the Bay Area, you're close to the wine country. I loved getting nice wines and having dinner with friends and popping open a good bottle of wine, and you know, I was a part of that culture. I also liked imported beers, you know. So I didn't see anything wrong with these things. But as I was developing in this relationship with God, I knew one thing, if I was having any intentions upon furthering this relationship with Wanda, these things would not work. But even more so, they wouldn't work because I kept feeling like, what if the possibility existed that these things would get in the way of my relationship with God? So I just stopped them. And I mean, just like that, dropped them. Not one time did I ever desire to go back to it. And I decided to stop drinking coffee because I liked what you would call designer coffee also, because that always made me want to smoke a cigarette. So I dropped all of these things with no regret. And that in itself was a miracle. So I believe I was set up to be a Mormon anyway. Exactly. So one thing led to another. Wanda and I eventually, we got married. Wanda used to tell me, I'd moved from the Bay Area down here. And Wanda and her sister, my sister-in-law, Elva, would get visits from the missionaries. And when they'd get these visits, I'd go upstairs and watch TV, watch sports. And one evening, the missionaries asked, did they think Brother Willis would mind them visiting him? And they said, well, we don't know. You have to ask him. Now, let me tell you, my wife and my sister-in-law never told me anything. They never. But you see, what won my wife over is she would see me in the morning. I had this devotional where I'd pray. I'd get on my knees every morning, and then I'd read my scriptures. I was a praying man. I still am. And so I think Wanda just had faith that I would eventually choose the restored gospel.
So they never spoke to you about it, never tried to sit down and share it with you?
I would hear them say temple, but they would never tell me what was going on in the temple. I'd hear them whispering about garments, and I didn't understand what that was about, but they wouldn't tell me. And so one day, well, and what I would do, any monies that I would come across, I would put my 10% in there and drop it in the mail slot of their church. And my wife suggested that I, you know, put my name on it. And I said, no, God knows who's doing it. And so one day, what I would do, I had started working, and I had to work on Sundays. But what I would do is I would strategically plan certain Sundays that I can take off for like sick leave or vacation day and go to church with the family. And so one of those days I went to their ward, and that did it. It was like they were talking about things that were deep in God. And when I went to the high priest quorum, and I was allowed to speak, and there was a lot of stuff that was pent up, and they were talking about things I was interested in. And I was encouraged by who I call my mentor. He doesn't like me to call him that, Brother Peterson. He encouraged me to speak because he felt I was pretty versed in the scriptures. Now, when these missionaries came to visit, I thought this was an answer to my prayer. I still believe that it was,
It
is an answer to my prayer. Because before I started going to church on a regular basis on Sunday, I was taking the lessons, and I felt that God answered my prayer by sending me the missionaries. And they were informing me on things that there were always blanks in my understanding. And it gave me great joy. And so they eventually told me that what follows this is baptism and becoming a member of the church. And so I had a dream that I went to the boss and diplomatically told him that I needed to quit because something was coming up, that a responsibility that I had to the church, and that I was going to have Sundays. And I really appreciated all that they did for me, and that they were my first friends outside of my immediate family. And the boss said, you have Sundays off.
And this was a dream, you said?
Yeah, it was in a dream, but I followed the dream and did exactly what I was saying to my boss in the dream. I got a meeting with the boss in real life and proceeded to say these things, and the boss said, you have Sundays off.
And tell us what year this is, Eddie.
This was in 2006. I moved here August 17th, 2005. And somewhere around Thanksgiving, I guess, is when I first went to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints with my family.
And so how long after that were you actually baptized?
Well, I started receiving the lessons in, I think it was July or late June 2006, and I was baptized August 12th.
You know, it's wonderful to hear your experience and how the two of you came to the church and the family came to the church. A lot of others don't have the luxury of coming in the exact same way because they are introduced to the church by either missionaries without the search, and some have it, or friends or coworkers or neighbors. And they have that same experience that, you know, Wanda, your friends were telling you way back when. You don't want to have anything to do with them. They're the racist church. And fortunately, you had good friends that you were having a very good experience with, and you had a strength inside you that helped you to see that these people were good. There may be some issues there, not sure what they are, but I know these people are good, and I'm going to stick with that. Some have that. Some have the opportunity or the obstacle, should I say, of the priesthood restriction and the claims of racism and inequality throwing at them. And it's a major obstacle for them to deal with in coming unto the church. Have you had that experience in any way, shape, or form, or friends or family that you know of who have had that experience?
Yes, I believe that that's the biggest weapon of the enemy, that he throws that at African Americans to keep African Americans from realizing the blessings that they can receive being a part of the church and being a part of the full gospel and being a part of the full plan of salvation. And so my whole picture of it was, and how I always seemed to handle it, we were discriminated against all the way around throughout the entire country. Mormons were discriminated against for the religion throughout the entire country. And I just do not believe God wanted us to have a double whammy on us. When you have a relay race, who do you save to bring that baton into home? You save your strongest runner to bring it in. And I believe that because of all of our oppression, all the things that we had to go through, all the things that we had to see and learn, we're bringing it in home in this last dispensation.
What a beautiful thought. Ed, you had some thoughts you wanted to share on that regarding the priesthood.
When I became a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the priesthood was not an issue for me. I was so excited that my prayer was answered. There was nothing that could ever get in my way to think anything else but that the Lord answered my prayer concerning my relationship with Him, closer relationship. This is the answer, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Now, after the fact is when I began to hear about blacks holding the priesthood. And I knew, me being black, that I was probably going to be hit with this question sometime or another, sooner
Absolutely.
Or later. And I wasn't sure how I was going to answer it, except for I could say it wasn't an issue for me. Because I found, and I've said this many times when I've done talks in the church, whatever ward I was in, and when I've only been in two wards now, but that I've felt glory after glory after glory being a member of this church. I'm talking about personal glory. I could see the Lord working in my life, in my family, and so on, you know, and those are glorious experiences. So what I did was I looked at some historical facts. One of the main issues was slavery, the abolishment of slavery, and there had to be certain rights that had to be protected. And so it had to be protected for all Americans, so that included African Americans.
Right.
Now, before the Civil War started, the church started in 1830. Now, if things were bad during the time we were having laws put on the book to protect our liberty, what must it have been like back in 1830? Well, my summation was that it's probably a lot worse. And so,
agreed.
I believe that you're going to be able to find a racist in any church.
Agreed.
And I don't care if they're in leadership or they're a new member. You're going to find a racist. You're going to find a racist in a black church. But the doctrine that God gives us, the commandments that He gives us, has no place for racism. That's a person's choice to decide that that part of God's truth they're not going to follow. But that doesn't mean that we have to let their actions motivate us not to receive the truth.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that sentiment, and I'm sure listeners will as well. One of the things that we want to acknowledge is that, when you've done so eloquently, is that, you know, it really is the Lord's church. And we all have the ability to study the words to know if they're of Him, get on our knees and pray and ask Him whether they're of Him. The questions we're asking is this church without flaw? No, we're not asking that question. Are the people perfect within this church? No, we're not asking that question. Those questions are of little consequence. Right. The question that is of the most importance is this church truly of You? And the beauty of having a relationship already established with the Lord from whatever walk of life you come from is that you can actually utilize that very relationship to find out whether this is of Him or not. And that really is really at the center of the issue for all. We're going to have to ask that question at one point or another if we're going to know.
But you also have, on the other end, a very real obstacle. We have a very well-documented history of inequality, of teachings of inequality, of not only restriction, but if you, you know, anyone can walk in the church bookstore or look on the internet and they can find the statements of inequality that have been put out. They're there. We can't ignore them. We can't deny that they're there. It's very easy to understand if you put it in the context that you put it in. Look what was going on in 1830, and the Civil War wouldn't happen till later. And so we always assume that we're going to assign today's mindset to yesterday's behavior. And we really, really can't do that. However, the beauty of it is if we know, and the point that you made, the Lord's doctrine has always been one of equality. We might not have always have done exactly what he asked us to do and everything that he asked us to do. However, his doctrine has always been that of equality. We have to know exactly where to go in those scriptures to help men and women who we come in contact with to understand those truths. And so that's why this outreach program exists. That's why the Blacks in the Scriptures DVD series is there. That's why Nobody Knows the Untold Story of Black Mormons is out there, and the Black LDS website and Black LDS Facebook. All of those avenues are designed to help this understanding come about and to remove the obstacles that are real.
Exactly. Our story, and I don't mean Wanda and my story, I mean us as Americans of African descent, is one of struggle. And the advantages that we as Americans have today is because of the struggles of those before us. And so this is no different. As a matter of fact, this is the perfect stage. We really need to embrace it because the advantages are far-reaching. And so that's what I really want a lot of African Americans in this country to understand, that this is a worthwhile struggle, because there's truly blessings that come through this church, through the restored gospel. And we as a people need all the blessings we can get.
Yeah, we'd agree with you wholeheartedly there. And unfortunately, we have a situation in which, you know, our missionaries go out unprepared to answer the very genuine questions that are going to be had about our religion, because people genuinely want to know, you know, is your doctrine racist? Is your God racist? Are your leaders racist? I mean, these are very genuine questions based upon a wealth of documented evidence in their minds that says, yeah, there might be some issues over there. And so with that in mind, I mean, we literally turn millions of people away from the church every single year because we don't know our scriptures relative to these issues. But as we go forth through the African American Outreach Program, through all the efforts that are out there designed to help people answer these questions, or help those investigators or people who have questions, help the missionaries become better missionaries, help the teachers to become better teachers, help the members to have oil in their lamp, so to speak, in relationship to these issues, what we're finding is that hundreds upon hundreds per year, just with our African American Outreach Program, our individual efforts with our coordinators around the country, are coming into the church. Basically, the obstacle is being removed. African Americans are coming into the church in large number where the obstacle can be removed. They're being turned away from the church where the obstacle is still there. And so we have to be very real about our preparation to help those who the Lord has called us to help. And that's all, regardless of what their race or culture is, that might have questions relative to the restriction, priesthood, equality, curses, skin color, etc.
We've used this analogy to better illustrate the challenges here. You know, in 78, when the priesthood ban was lifted, that did knock down the wall. However, there's still obstacles as a result of the wall coming down. And We need to remove those obstacles, because, yes, the wall is down, but there's still debris causing obstruction for individuals to walk freely through the path leading to the church. And so the efforts that Marvin just mentioned help remove that debris so that people who are not willing to jump over those initial obstacles, it removes the debris so that people can have a clear pathway into the Lord's church.
Well, yeah, just like when I early mentioned about the 13th and 14th and 15th Amendment, it's one thing to pass the laws, but getting people to recognize them and enforce is another thing.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
But the beauty of it is that we see the work moving ahead so beautifully as we are utilizing the scriptures to actually take this work forward and answer these questions. And the invitation is for all not to believe our words, but simply to study the scriptures that we pointed out. Get on your knees and ask the Lord yourself.
Exactly.
He can give you a perfect knowledge of those things. And so one of the curiosities some of the listeners had was they were curious as to what your reactions were the first time you viewed the Blacks in the Scriptures DVD series.
Well, tears came in my eyes, goosebumps on my skin, and something welling up in my chest of just wonderment, amazement, joy. I don't know what other accolades I could give, but they're all there. Because it's something that you already, well, in my case, I already knew, but I didn't know to that degree. And the way it was put and laid out genealogically, first of all, was quite edifying. And it's something that just can't be escaped. You can't get around it. It's the factual truth. And so, you know, the truth is the only thing that's going to combat unfair practices.
Yeah.
And after seeing and reading and seeing and things one way in your mind's eye and being taught something one way in your mind's eye, and then you hear that piece and you watch it and you go, yeah.
More like an aha moment.
Yeah, a serious aha moment, because you go, you know, I hadn't put that together like that. Yeah, how could that not go that way, you know? And so, I mean, I'm going to love Jesus no matter what color he is. I'm going to love the scriptures no matter who are part of them. But I've always been excluded from everything. And so just to know that my people played a strong part in many things just made me feel good.
I really appreciate the comments you've made about being excluded. I think until you have actually walked in the shoes or sat down to listen to experiences like this, you really don't know what that person, you know, sitting next to you in a sacrament meeting or a relief society or a priesthood meeting is experiencing. And for those of you who are not aware, there is a tremendous film that actually helps to articulate some of these thoughts, helps you to get inside the experience of some of the African-American members. It's entitled Nobody Knows, The Untold Story of Black Mormons. And it's actually going to be airing on national television coming up soon. And we'll be posting that on the Blacks in the Scriptures website for all to see. But those experiences are real. And you don't know until you've actually had a chance to listen and see the tears in the eyes, and you can hear them in the voice of people who say, I just didn't know. I didn't know this was going on. This is why it's so important that we have these conversations.
Yeah. And they really don't know. And I know their heart goes out for us and that they love us. And because they've never experienced some of the things we have experienced. I've been a member now for 33 years, and off and on a member, someone would say something to me, and I'd take it to heart and leave the church. And guess who suffered? Me. And finally, the very last thing that happened, I finally just had to say, you know what? I'll pray for you. You're going to have to deal with that. That's your problem. I'm so sorry you feel that way. But I have every right to be here just like you do.
And I think really that's the key. I can remember a couple of times I was asked by
I think people genuinely wanting to know, African Americans wondering why I was a part of the church and asked me how could you be a part of that church? I mean, how, you know, self-respect and dignity, how could you do it? And I asked him, I said, well, why are you still a citizen of this country? And I said, they exercise racism against us and inequality and injustice and, you know, for so long, and it still goes on. Why are you here? They never looked at it in that perspective. And I said, I'll tell you why. I said, because this country does not belong to those who mistreated us or mistreat us. Nor does the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints belong to anybody who did or does now harbor racist views. It really is the Lord's church. Mm-hmm. We have every, not only right, but an obligation to be where our Father is. And this is His house, and we are here covenant and committed to help Him move the work forward. And what Wanda was saying about being included, there have been artists from all over who are doing work within the church and outside the church who have been inspired by what they have seen in the Blacks in the Scriptures DVD series and began painting and drawing images to reflect the people in the Scriptures closer to what they would have been. And so I'm excited to announce there's a work coming out by James Fulmer. James Fulmer, this October, and it is called Other Heroes of the Book of Mormon or Other Heroes of the Scripture, something along those lines, where basically you will see images, scriptural images of people of color and no differences between the coloring of the Lamanites and Nephites, which has been a big misconception within the church.
Wow.
So
exactly. Even Marvin the Jaredite portray actual African features clearly.
It's very exciting. That inclusion is changing as a result of the efforts of those who will not stop trying to take the word of the Lord forth. So there is a very specific and meaningful reasons why we are here. And we are helping to change the landscape and the mindset and helping for all to see that all truly are one.
That's why it's important for us in this work to really stay prayed up and close to the Lord.
Absolutely.
You know, when Jesus said a divided house cannot stand, He means that on every level.
Great.
In Baptists and Methodist churches, I've experienced this old saying, Satan goes to church too, and he knows the Scriptures. And one of the convincing factors, not that I really needed to be convinced, because I was told, pray and ask God, is this church true and all. And for a long time, I said, I'm not going to do that because you guys are an answer to my prayers. I don't need to do that. I already know you're true. But eventually I did because something dawned on me in one of my meditative times that just be obedient and do it. And so I did. And this is what came to me. Is that it makes all the sense in the world for this church to be persecuted, because it is true. And it also makes all the sense in the world that the enemy's relationship that he wants to have with our people is one to put us through persecution, racism, and discrimination in this church, which is the true church. So this is part of the struggle that we have, because the enemy is definitely involved in this. You might want to edit all of this out, but that's my belief.
No, that's really good stuff.
Yeah. It is going on wax.
Yeah. So, no, this is great, and this is a great discussion. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that the two of you specifically would like to talk about?
I'd like to talk personal. Like, Ed and I were separated for 35 years.
Wow.
We see each other time and time again to visit the kids, but he never got married, and neither did I. We both had different relationships where we never committed to anyone else. And so we got married, and then we went and were sealed together in the temple. And he said I never bothered him, but the one thing I used to say to him before he became a member, because we got married before he became a member, and the one thing I used to say was, I want to be sealed to you for time and eternity. I didn't have you all my life, so I'll settle for eternity.
And what did I used to say?
Okay.
Even though I didn't understand what that meant. One thing that I wanted to share, and that is our family is watching us. So my point is not what I'm doing, but what God is doing through us for other African Americans. They are in our family, and we want, that has been Wanda and my prayer, that our family become members of the church. And so I do know that they're watching us, and in spite of what the bad press might be, they don't see the bad press transpired in the way we live.
Yeah, it's really kind of interesting, because when we have such an eagerness for our friends and family and neighbors to join the church, to become members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we'd really love to have you know that it's not just to become members, but it is to be able to enjoy all of the blessings and the fruits of the gospel that we experience from our primary age children, getting great loving care, teaching activities, helping them to develop in the ways of the Lord, to the young men and women programs that help them to develop into men of honor and women of virtue, to the priesthood and relief society quorums of the church that help make good men better and good women even greater. There are so many benefits to the gospel, from education to growing closer to the Lord, to wiping out and eliminating unwed pregnancies, to broken families. I mean, what if you could have something that would help you to reduce all of those things, substance abuses? All of those things are here and more. And the thing that we want to share is that joy. We want you to experience a greater life. I don't care how good your life is. You bring all of those blessings to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Place them at the feet of the Savior, and he will multiply those blessings and make your life even greater than it is right now. And so that's why we're so eager to share the gospel, because we want to share those blessings that are associated with membership.
And I want to say something to the sisters that are sitting in church every Sunday by themselves and feeling that there's no one for them, that they will probably never receive the priesthood because of the dynamics of African-American males or the dynamics of the men in the church or whatever. Yes, God has someone for all of us. And I know that I can say that for a fact. I was 58 years old when I got married. And so you're never too old and you're never too young. And if you live the principles of the gospel and you do what our Heavenly Father requests of us and you maintain that virtue, he will bless you with a mate.
What a wonderful message of hope.
And I got to make one thing clear about the Black Panther Party.
Oh, sure, please.
The Black Panther Party members that are still around but not in the party are in opposition to the Black Panther Party of this day, because the Black Panther Party still exists, but it does not exist with the same doctrine. The Black Panther Party now, this is my opinion and the opinion of a lot of other ex-Panthers, are built around racism, and we're in disagreement with that. So I just don't want the listeners of this program to think that it's the same Black Panther Party, because it's not.
Yeah, that's good to know, and that was actually one of the questions that came in from one of the listeners is, does the party still exist? Do you still agree with the philosophies, the teaching, and direction of
no.
the... Okay, this is great to know. This has been very, very educational. Bishop, any questions for our guests, Ed and Wanda Willis?
You know, know, this was just such a great experience, Marvin. Ed and Wanda, you guys are awesome. What a wonderful story. What a wonderful conversion story. What a wonderful ending to the story with you guys being sealed in the temple. This is just great, and I know your message is going to touch the hearts and minds of both members and non-members, and just thank you so much for taking the time to have this interview with us. We truly appreciate it, and I'm sure many others will appreciate your time and efforts. So,
and I think I have one more thing to say. So sorry.
No need to apologize.
No need to apologize. You can say as many things as you like. We have all the time you need.
Both our daughters were baptized, 8 and 10. And because of our affiliation with the church, they became totally inactive. And one of our daughters just went back to church this year. And one of our other daughters is sort of investigating it. So what Ed and I do is we pray for them, and we ask God to show them the right way. And so I know that there's a lot of families out there that have children inactive, and they're so concerned about it, and they feel so bad about it. And I know that they pray about it, but pray with hope, because I'm a testimony that my daughter has come back to church, and she's committed, and she was one that said, I will never do it.
How beautiful. How beautiful. Thanks. Ed, any thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
I'm just overwhelmed. This was a wonderful opportunity to be a part of this broadcast, to express our joys, our road that led to this. You know, this is very therapeutic, I want you to know.
And that's why somebody once asked me, why do you guys keep talking about this stuff? And it's like, well, first of all, we're commanded to. It's scriptural in the Doctrine and Covenants. It talks about this. But also, it is therapeutic. Get it off your chest. You get ideas. You feel better moving on. You learn a lot. And speaking of learning a lot, there are other questions that have come in asking, are they going to write a book? We need to see.
Yeah.
They want to see it in book form. So can you tell us if you have any plans to do that?
Well, I've already started writing it. It's called From Panther to Priesthood.
Oh, beautiful.
And I'm not this literary genius or anything. I'm just writing my life that led to the Black Panther Party, and my life that led out of it, and my life that led to the priesthood, and the blessings I enjoy within the realm of the church. And I won't be writing specifics about the temple, but I'm definitely going to add that in there, because there's a lot of ordinances that are provided for us by the Lord in there that truly blesses the family.
I'm so very grateful for this gospel, and I'm just asking my Heavenly Father to let me to continue to hold on to the rod and continue to grow in it, and to continue to make a difference in everybody's life, not just African-American, everybody.
That's right.
I want to touch everybody's life with this gospel, and I want to share it with everybody, because it is so very, very wonderful, and it's so complete, and it's everything that we need to progress in this life. Amen.
You know, my family kind of chuckle at me. I have an expression that I use, how my life has changed since being a part of their lives and the life that we have with the churches. I'm in high cotton. And if you're black, you might understand where I'm coming from.
Oh yes.
But that's the expression that I use to explain what it feels like, my daily life, what it feels like. And what's interesting is that the cotton is so high that I really believe it can get higher. I think that you gentlemen today have just shown me that higher cotton.
Yeah.
I'm just glad to be a part of all of this.
Well,
and I thank you for thinking of us.
Well, I tell you, one of the things that is just so amazing about this work is the people that we are blessed to come in contact with and to be able to share time like the two of you. I think we're in a mutual admiration society, because we just absolutely have the highest respect
And it's just very humbling to be able to have this conversation and this time with you and to kind of unite our efforts to help share the gospel in a larger way. So we are grateful, extremely grateful for the two of you.
Thank you.
Bishop Bethel, did you have any parting words for the Willis family?
You know, guys, keep up the great work. Ed, I'm glad you're bringing this book forward because your story needs to be heard by many. And, you know, this podcast, this interview will help in that effort, but you guys continue to do what you're doing. You have a great story, and it will appeal to so many people, as I mentioned earlier, member and non-member.
I hope understand. So.
Oh, no question. I mean, like I said, it's experience trumps explanation, and you having the experience you have had and to now be a full-time member of the church, what a great, great story. And so, again, we're just grateful to have you guys be a part of this interview. And so thank you, guys.
Thank you, Bishop.
And to our listeners all around the world, we invite you to invite a friend and a neighbor and to continue to share this and challenge them just to read, just to read the Book of Mormon, read the Doctrine and Covenants, read the Pearl of Great Price. You know, see if there's anything in there that doesn't lead them closer to Christ. See if there's anything in there that would lead them to believe that this is not of Him. But more importantly, invite them to get on their knees and ask. Use that relationship that they've already established with Him to answer that simple question, is this of you? And once He answers, be there for them, for their questions, in addition to help guide them and direct them in their steps and their investigation. But we also wanted to point out some additional resources. We invite you to go to the Blacks in the Scriptures website. Again, www.blacksinthescriptures.com. There's video, there's audio, there's text to read that will really help you in putting oil in your lamp, having the light to light the way for others into the gospel and help to remove those obstacles. We want to also invite you to visit www.untoldstoryofblackmormons. Again, that's untoldstoryofblackmormons.com. And to read and to grab that video series that's up there, very, very enlightening. And look on the Blacks in the Scriptures website. In the news, we'll show you when that will be airing on TV throughout the nation. You'll also want to visit the blacklds.org and BlackLDS Facebook. There's also the Genesis Group, www.ldsgenesisgroup.org. That is actually the official African-American program for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's about it for sites to visit, but stay tuned for Jay Fulmer's work coming out. And also write us at Blacks in the Scriptures website, again, www.blacksinthescriptures.com. And we can actually add you to the mailing list for future firesides or events and articles of interest that will be coming out. So, Ed and Wanda Willis, we again thank you for your time with us today. And for Bishop Fred Bethel, I am Marvin Perkins. And for the African American Outreach Coordinators, we all say, may the Lord's Spirit guide you as you seek to learn of Him.